Hey everyone, welcome back to episode 2 of season 2 of Trail Talks. In this episode, we will be talking to Julia Sheehan, better known as Rocket on the Trail. We were excited to have her on the pod to talk about her origin story, as well as her epic trail adventures around the US. She completed the Appalachian Trail back in 2019, the AZT and Art Loeb Trail in 2021, and has plans to complete the PCT in 2022. In this episode, we talk about the struggles of looking one-dimensional as an online personality, how smaller long-distance trails can be just as fulfilling as hiking over 2,000 miles, and that sometimes the things that are best for us are the things we don't want to do. We hope you enjoy our conversations with Julia.
Breaking news, everybody! The CDC now recommends, regardless of testing positive or negative, that you should listen to our podcast.
Hey! Welcome back to Season 2, Episode 2, people. We are interviewing a very special person. Before we get started, question to hikers. What is the longest hike that you've ever gone on? Drop it down in the comments. If you're on Spotify, I don't know, drop it somewhere else. It is good to see everyone. Again, welcome back to episode 2. Today we are talking to Julia Sheehan, better known as Rocket on the Trail. Back in 2019, she did the Appalachian Trail, made an awesome documentary over it, so you should check that out. After that, she went on to do the AZT, the Art Loeb, and she has some big hiking plans for the future. She needs no other introduction. If you're in the thru-hiking community, I'm sure you've seen her face around. So, what else do we have to say before we bring her on?
If you want to know what our lives are like here in Korea and what the hiking is, you can go check out our YouTube channel, which is the same name as our Instagram. Also, we are completely up to date on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and wherever you listen to your podcasts. So go check that out. We already have season 2, episode 1 with Quadzilla up. So if you missed last week, don't worry. You can go listen to it.
All right, let's bring her on. And Hiking Fireball, she is a sweetheart. I'm excited.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Pretty good. Just woke up. I feel like I say that to every guest.
Well, good morning.
Good morning. Where are you calling from?
I am currently in North Carolina.
Ah. Is that where you're originally from?
So I'm originally from central Pennsylvania, but I'm actually down here on a travel contract for nursing. So I'll be down here for a few more weeks. Then I head back to Pennsylvania for a quick contract and then out to the PCT, hopefully.
Gotcha. Nice. How long are travel nursing contracts? Are they usually 6 months?
They're anywhere from 8 weeks to 16 weeks. So I'm currently on a 13-week assignment, and then I'm going to be doing a quick 8-week assignment. And then off for hopefully most of 2022.
Nice. Is that hard to get adjusted just to jump to a new city and jump right into new work?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't work since February when I quit to hike the AZT. So getting back into work after taking 7 months off at a new facility with new staff, the first couple of weeks I definitely was crying on my everywhere.
Good.
What part of North Carolina are you in?
What's that?
What part of North Carolina are you in?
Just east of Raleigh, but on my contract, so I'm staying with my boyfriend who lives east of Raleigh, but my contract is on the west side of Raleigh. So it's just a little drive in between. So I stay with him on my days off, and then I hop over there and spend the night or the day sleeping there.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So do you want to just start? And I mean, I kind of introduced you, but do you want to give your origin story and how you got started in the thru hiking world?
Yeah, so my villain origin story, just kidding. So for me, it kind of all started back in 2018. I was unhappy with my life. I was working as a nurse. I owned my own home. I had all of these plans in motion, and I realized that I did not want to do any of them. So I was 29. I would be turning 30 in 2019, and I thought, I cannot turn 30 doing something I'm not happy with. I had checked all the boxes in life and just wasn't happy with where I was. So I started Instagramming, hashtagging, YouTubing, just what can I do? I kind of was thinking maybe van life, but thought, do I really want to live in a van? And suddenly stumbled across some thru hiking pages and was immediately obsessed. And 5 months later, I was on the Appalachian Trail and had plans to hike the PCT in 2020, but COVID kind of made me stay in my job for a year longer than I had originally hoped. And then luckily for me this year, I was able to hike the AZT and start the CDT. And so it's just the wheel keeps spinning.
Oh yeah. Nice. Cool. What was I going to say?
Did you have any other outdoor recreation, like experience or hobbies before getting into thru hiking?
An avid runner, and I say avid as in I will run strictly for like 3 months and then take 9 months off.
Yep.
3 months a year, I'm a runner, I am a trail runner, I love running, and then for 9 months out of the year, I love running, I just have to get back into it. I've always been into outdoor sports. Growing up, we were never inside, rain, shine, or snow. We were always outside exploring the forest. We lived in a forested lot. So we were just big explorers as a child, like as kids. And then as I got older, you know, I was always interested in those things, but other things took precedence, like the bar scene and things that were really unhealthy as someone in their 20s who, you know, everyone kind of goes through their phases of like finding what makes them happy. And so I spent a long time in that, not really focused on the outdoor sports. And then once I got back into it, into my later 20s, is when I just kind of realized that that's where I should have been all along.
Nice.
Just running.
Yeah, I get it. I go like a month of being really good, and then I'm just absolutely terrible for the next year.
If you have one bad run and it just derails you for months.
Yeah, that is true. Mm-hmm. And just laziness. What was I going to say? So you were in the military, right? You were in the military before all of this? How did the military shape you into the person you are today?
It seems like a lifetime ago, but I enlisted in the Air Force when I was 19. I had finished a year of college, and I was an unruly teenager. I was more interested in how I could do things that could get me in trouble than I was in my education. I was a very bright student, but I just focused on the wrong things. And at 19, I realized if I don't straighten up, something bad could potentially happen. So I went and talked to a recruiter, and like 3 days later, I was on a plane to Texas, where the Air Force just, it kind of force feeds you like responsibility and accountability and saying yes, sir, when you want to say hell no.
Yeah.
So it taught me like how, when to take charge, when to fall back, when to just shut up and work. A lot of patience. It's a lot of hurry up, get somewhere, and then wait for days, weeks, months, or whatever. So it taught me a lot of patience, a lot of responsibility. I was financially independent by 19. And I think it's a great opportunity if you don't know what you want to do in life, if you're willing to kind of give up most of your personality and freedom for like a greater cause.
Yeah. Wow. Nice. Nicely said. Why did you pick the Air Force?
Biased. My stepdad's brother was in the Air Force. And then I also, the reputation is the Air Force treats their folks better. They pay them a little better and their facilities are a little nicer. I don't know the truth to that, but that's kind of ultimately what led me into that direction.
Cool. Interesting. Nice.
Do you think that's helped you like with your mentality with hiking at all, of just kind of like pushing through when you have to and putting your head down and going?
I do. There is so much discomfort in the military, even when you're at home base and you're just training. I always was selected for our training missions where, you know, you're stuck in a hotel working 16-hour days. So I think I just learned that you have to do with what you have. And instead of complaining about everything that's going wrong, sometimes you just have to just suck it up because it's not going to get better because you complain. So I think it helped me learn patience and accountability, and just sometimes you're just going to be uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, I got that. So you said, you discovered thru hiking by going through YouTube and just like going down the internet rabbit hole. Was there like something specific, like a specific video or documentary or article that you saw and you're just like, the Appalachian Trail, I'm going to do it?
Of course. So my number one YouTube documentary that if you have not watched it, 100% you have to watch The Family. They through hiked in 2018. They hiked two adults and there, I want to say five or six children. And I absolutely was just bawling for like 2 days after finishing it. I think it's called Fight for Together. They have an Instagram and a YouTube. Their documentary was absolutely like, I started watching it like in January. So I only had a few more weeks before I was leaving. And I just like remember being obsessed with like their journey and how their children did it. And as an adult having through hiked, I know how hard it is. I cannot imagine being a 10-year-old and being able to. So it was absolutely just such a stunning, you know, video.
That I yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you feel like it set up any expectations going on trail?
I think that's a big problem with vlogging and like showing videos is people already recognize locations. For me, I tried to only watch a very limited amount of videos and pictures because I wanted to be surprised. And yeah. I didn't know about Max Patch. I didn't know about the Whites. I didn't know about the Roan Highlands. There were so many things, the Grayson Highlands, that I didn't know until, you know, 100 miles out. So for me, it was so exciting learning about the trail while hiking the trail. Not that I would recommend that, but I do think that it sets up an expectation that it might be, because you see these people persevering that you think, oh, well, it can't be that hard. And then you get out there and you're, you know, reminded that it can be very difficult.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. All the vlogs, a lot of them tend to focus on the highlights and look, this is so much fun. And it's like, no, there's a whole other side to it that is really like fun.
The screaming and the throwing things. Yeah. Like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody shows that, so.
So when you started on your AT hike, was your goal to document it and make it into a documentary like you did?
I really didn't have any plans. I wanted to personally record videos because I am a person that I like to visualize my memories. So I journal every day on trail and then in my free time in my real life. And I just thought it would be a great way to have like a moving journal. So, you know, the vlogging was always going to happen. I had no intentions of making a documentary, but after coming home and going through that post-trail depression period and just being so like sad and yearning and missing my friends and the trail, I kind of wanted to relive some of those experiences. So I just kind of started, this idea just started happening. And, you know, I was spent 8 hours a day for like 2 months working on it and just was wrapped up in it. So the documentary, I call it a vlogumentary, kind of just happened from me being sad and missing the trail.
Mm.
Very cool.
Did you find it hard to vlog while you were on the trail? Like stay consistent with it?
There was only a few days where I absolutely, like there was only one day I recorded nothing and that was in Maine because as if, you know, Maine is tough. So for me, I didn't find it hard because I only spent a few minutes a day really with my phone. So get up, leave camp. I was usually the first out of camp just because I don't like to be cold. So I'm up and moving. And it's easy to say, this is where we're at. This is what we're doing. And then I would just record views and my friends, just like you would on your, you know, on your Insta story or Snapchat or whatever. And so for me, it was no more time than anyone else spends on their phone. So it was pretty easy. Only a few days where it really felt like a burden, but for, you know, for me, I've vlogged other trails too. And I just, it's now just part of my experience. And I love that.
Yeah, no, I definitely get that. It really like, it gives, for me, especially, it gives purpose when you start getting really bored of the mundane, it really gives purpose to the day. Like you really get excited about trying to piece together like art in its own way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So when you got off trail, was it hard to kind of sift through all of the material that you had, or did you find it easy to piece together what you wanted to include in the video?
Surprisingly, I didn't have a lot of extra videos. So I used a large percentage of what I already shot. So I think the key to vlogging is making sure that you know what you want to capture, like in the day. It's like, I know what I want to show, and then the view, and then maybe something extra. Because I think the more stuff you record, the harder it is to figure out what was going on here and what were we doing there. And then it just becomes like, where's that clip and where were we? And for me, it was easy because I only had like 10 clips a day, you know, to sort through. So it was pretty easy for me. And I, for some, you know, only 4 months after the trail, I had a great memory of when things had happened. So it was pretty easy.
Nice. Well, so let's talk about the actual trail. You started with two girls. How did you know them before the trail?
So I had met Melissa Bings and then Allie Aspen. We had met through like the AT class of 2020. on like Facebook, or maybe it was on like through the Trek or something. Like I think we were all blogging or vlogging through the Trek, and there's like a Trek Facebook family page. And so I kind of, you know, people post like, I'm starting in, you know, mid-March, who else is starting? And then as people comment, you kind of like group off and start a group message. And we just realized that I was supposed to start on like the 13th or 14th. And they kind of convinced me to start with them just because I figured strength in numbers, especially as a woman who has no idea what she's doing. And both had experience. So I thought, if anything, I can just ride their coattails until I learn what I'm doing. And it was actually a really wonderful group because we just kind of cried and laughed through the first few days together. And it was super special.
How was your first few days on trail?
I almost quit on the first day. So
really?
Wow. Yeah, the approach trail, great, wonderful, heavenly. That first day on the actual AT, I had been experiencing IT band syndrome from training in January. I was running and I developed a sharp pain and I had been resting for over a month. Day one on the AT, sharp pain, excruciating. I thought, I'm going to be one of those people that quits on the first day. Like, quit my job. I sold my house. Like, oh my God, my family, they had bets on me. And I was like, my brother is going to win the $100. So I knew that no matter what, I had to at least make it to Neil Gap. And the pain never really went away, but I just learned ibuprofen and mobility. And eventually, it, you know, was more manageable. But yeah, I almost quit. It was,
wow. Yeah. Wait, you liked the approach trail?
Well, I mean, compared to the pain that I experienced on the second.
That's true.
When I had two retirees, nothing against them, were literally blowing past me after like our lunch spot. And I thought, there's no way I'm going to do this. But the approach trail, honestly, in my opinion, don't do it. It's not worth it. It's not half a miles. Get a ride to Springer. And
yeah,
there you go.
Nice. Were you surprised, or were there a lot of women hiking the trail back in 2019?
Oh yeah, I guess I keep saying 2020, but it was 2019. I think there was a very large percentage of women, because I remember on the first day, most of the hikers we saw were women. Mm-hmm. And towards the end, I think like in my group, there was four women and four men that summited. So in reality, our group was pretty much 50-50. But I think there was like at least 40 to 45% were women. As far as who summited, every group summit picture, there was a large amount of women. So I think 2019 was a pretty successful year for the ladies.
That's awesome. Yeah, because when we were on in 2020, when everything shut down, there were still a lot of women on. And I was like, I was very pleasantly surprised to see how mixed it was.
Yeah, it was definitely like 50-50.
Yeah.
That makes me so happy. It makes me so happy. Like, finally, it's now just an even playing field, and I just love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are your still, like, recurring best memories from the Appalachian Trail?
You know, it's not necessarily the hiking. I think Franconia Ridge, we spent, like, all day on the actual Franconia Ridge. Mm-hmm. But a lot of it was just the people, the town food, like, just the things, like the comfort that you take for granted in everyday life, like those little bits of comfort and connection were just everything to me. Like, it wasn't the hiking and the views. It was just the experience itself. But some of the best days were just, you know, days where we kind of took it slow, enjoyed ourselves. And then there was also days where we were like, let's do a 30, let's do this. And just, it's kind of just the balance of what you can do whatever you want. Like, that's the stuff that, like, I find is the most special.
Yeah. Did you feel like you were getting vortexed in a lot of towns, or were you someone to like stay on trail?
The first half of the trail, I took 4-0s. So I was completely motivated through the first half. I was flying. I was so fast. I wanted to be this like badass chick. And then I got hurt at Harper's Ferry and went home for a few weeks. And then when I came back, I thought, well, you know, I'm probably going to quit. My knee's still hurting. You know, I can barely walk. But we'll just go until he quit. And that's when I linked up with my, the trail family that I summited with. And we were, all it took was one person to say, hey guys, change of plans, let's zero tomorrow. And everyone's like, okay, let's, you know, they're calling hotels and booking rooms. And, you know, I think I took 20 zeros in the second half.
Love that.
Sounds like our family.
When did the honeymoon phase ended like Harper's Ferry?
I think, like, I did Virginia in, like, less than 4 weeks. I kind of flew through Virginia, and that was, like, my experience of, like, how much I could challenge myself. And I think coming back was when I realized that just because you want to complete the trail does not mean that other things won't happen. And I think that was when the reality of you might not actually hike this trail, like you might not meet, like reach Katahdin. Like all through Maryland and Pennsylvania, I was absolutely convinced that I would be going home. And it was just a matter of time when the pain got too bad. And then eventually it went away for some weeks and others, but it became more manageable. And that's when I kind of thought by New Hampshire, like through the Mid-Atlantic region, I thought, okay, I've made it this far. As long as I can take ibuprofen, like I'm going to do it unless another injury happens.
So what injury did happen?
You know, I had pain directly beneath my kneecap that like, you could go straight through the kneecap, it was right behind my knee. And it was just a sharp stabbing pain every step. When I took ibuprofen, it would go away. And when I came home, I went to my doctor and she told me that it was just a weakening of my muscles, which I thought was kind of ridiculous since I was as strong as I'd ever been. And eventually the pain went away and I sometimes get it when I'm not active. So if I'm being a lazy bum for like a month, the pain will come back. So it motivates me to stay active because it does not hurt when I'm like, you know, working out. So I don't know what happened. I think it's one of the ligaments underneath my kneecap that are sprained or strained or partially torn that I've never gotten checked out. So until I need to, I'll just no injury.
Yeah.
You're fine.
Yeah, it's fine. I had a very similar kind of pain happen to me within like the first week on trail back in 2021 before we got off because of COVID. And so like same thing, I never got it checked out and it went away and I just pray it never comes back.
Yeah, whatever it was, it's future me's problem if it comes back. It's
not... Exactly.
Nothing a little ibuprofen can't fix.
Yeah, vitamin I, right?
Honestly, I've learned that ibuprofen and Tylenol can dang near fix almost anything.
Yep. When did the bug hit you? Like, when was it like, I'm going to keep through hiking, I want to do other trails?
So halfway through when my knee was starting to bother me was when I started telling my mom, like, I don't think this is going to happen. But also in the same sentence, it's like, I'm hiking the PCT next year. Like, I'm going to do that regardless. So before I even was halfway on the AT, the PCT was on my radar. And then by the end of the trail, I was already putting the permit day in my phone and got
nice.
And then 2020 happened and I realized I need to through hike because having a year without that experience was just horrible. I mean, 2020 was horrible in general. So 2021, I wasted no time. I tried to get in as much as I could. In 2022, I'm still got the bug.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Cool. And how did you get your trail name? How did you get Rocket?
So my official trail name is actually Snot Rocket. And ask anyone who's ever walked in the woods with me, something about being outside walking, it's just like a waterfall. So if I'm running, walking, day hiking, anything, if it's outside and in the forest, my nose is just a mess. So I'm always just shooting snot rockets. That's the most effective way to get rid of that drip. So
I love that. A weekend I was doing the same thing and my tramly was trying to call me snot rocket. So
he wouldn't take it.
I wouldn't take it.
I love it. I mean, some people call
me that's rocket. It's a great name. It's a great name. Yeah. Just leaving it for you.
Of course, I'll take it.
So 2020 happened. And you were supposed to hike the PCT. What was that experience like? What was like having to just say no to doing it that year?
So when the PCTA revoked permits, I remember I had released my video like March 2nd, like my announcement of I'm hiking, like I got my permit, everything's good. And then like the CDC started releasing things and then the PCTA like pulled their permits. And I just remember thinking, like, I don't know what to do. Hiking, you know, you're going to be away from the public. You're going to be safer out there. But then also we didn't know. It was like, there was just so many things that we didn't know. So many variables that we didn't know what the correct answers were. So giving up on my dream of the PCT in 2020 was, I just remember feeling like not only was I got off trail, had post-trail depression. Then we went into a global pandemic while I'm still fighting this post-trail depression period. And then getting rid of my dream of hiking that year, it was just a lot. I mean, 2020 was a lot in general, but it adding the insult of like the one thing that makes me happy was taken away from me was just, it was, and I just remember thinking, all right, 2021, what are you going to do? And that's when I started formulating the AZT, the CDT, possibly the PCT. Like I wanted to get everything in I could, and I had even planned on maybe doing the long trail and doing, you know, it's 4,000 miles. Like, my plan was just however many miles I could get in. And then, of course, you know, life got in the way. But yeah, 2021, I wasn't going to waste any time. So,
yeah. Was there any positives of 2020 or?
Well, I transferred to the emergency room, and that's the specialty that I'm in now. And I love emergency nursing. So if anything, I think that it kind of just made me a better off-trail person, which is like, you know, my identity off trail as a nurse. So it pushed me in a career choice that makes me more fulfilled and more challenged than the other nursing I was doing, which was inpatient neurosurgery. So a lot of brains and strokes and a lot of really intensive things, but the ER is just this fast paced, acute, like, it's very, you know, challenging. So if anything, it would be that I found a specialty in my career that makes me really happy.
Nice.
Cool.
So what made you choose the AZT next as the trail you wanted to do?
Well, I'll leave it up. My friend Bacon, who I hiked the AT with, Appalachian Bacon, he was like, let's hike the AZT before the PCT. And I thought, oh, okay, like, when are we doing it? And then my friend Mayer, who is, he has all these amazing hiking books you can find on Amazon, Mayer, he was also hiking the AZT, and I was planning on doing it. Bacon ended up backing out, which is fine. He, you know, had some other things going on with work. But eventually, you know, he just kind of put the bug in my ear. We watched Darwin's project on the AZT. That might be a good smaller trail just in case things pop off again with, you know, quarantine or whatever. So that kind of, it just made sense that I could hike it. We can hike it early in the season. So it made a lot of sense.
What was the transition from going from like AT Green Tunnel to like the desert of the AZT?
100% different.
Did you like it more?
So the Arizona Trail, I am planning on hiking it again. Like, with my boyfriend, I love the AZT. Honestly, I think everyone should hike it. It's 800 miles. It's nice and small. It's so beautiful. And there's only 4 mountains.
Really?
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, there's more than that, but there's only 4 really big climbs. Day 1, Miller Peak, Mica Peak, Mount Lemmon, and the Grand Canyon. I mean, that's literally it. Every 200 miles, you're having some type of big feature. But other than that, it's just national parks, cactuses, you know, orange dirt, just really cool desert. And the towns along the way love hikers. They're very small. They're, you know, it was easy to get a hitch. The resources were great. The trail angels were amazing. And I got to go somewhere that I'd never been before. So
cool. That's cool. What was the hottest that it got on trail? I know you did early in the season, but
We started way too early. Would not recommend starting in February like we did. But the hottest I think was maybe 95 in the low desert. But okay. It was so cold that our Sawyers froze like while we were drinking water. Like, it was so cold. It was when we climbed up Mica Mountain, and it was so cold at the top that everything froze, and like all 6 of our filters were frozen. So we all had to like get a ride into town the next day and like get new filters.
Jeez. Wow.
Were you prepped for how much snow you were going to have or how much cold weather?
No. I thought Arizona was warm all year. It was going to be beautiful. It's like going to be summer and winter. And very quickly, day 1, it 20 degrees. I was laying in my sleeping bag praying to God that I would survive the night, because I thought it's, you know, at the base of like where we started at the terminus, it was, you know, 60 degrees, 50 degrees with a chilly wind. But at Miller Peak, which is 9,100 feet, it was absolutely freezing. I did not sleep, and it only got snowier and snowier from there. By the end, we were, you know, post-holing in waist deep snow and having to just reroute through the roads. It was absolutely not the best decision.
God. Are you going to try to go Nobo again, or are you going to try to go the other way?
I'd like to go northbound again, but starting in late March or early April. I don't want it to be too hot where the water sources are like harder to come by. But I would definitely do it later than we did. It was way too cold to do it when we did it, but March,
So what were some of the, what would you say was the biggest similarity and the biggest difference between the AT and the AZT?
I would say the biggest similarity, is just the community. There was a very small AZT class of hikers, but everyone out there was just really cool. There were some first time through hikers. My friend Zach, who, you know, did the CD or the Colorado Trail this year, he's hiking the PCT next year. And just the group, like I started with Mayor and we actually did the entire trail together. And just the resources were really helpful. The landscapes were beautiful. Difference wise is, you know, desert compared to like wet, muggy AT ups and downs. It really, I don't think they could, there really is any similarities other than you're walking and your feet hurt.
How did the trail change your perspective from going from like a 2000 mile hike to like an 800 mile hike, like a smaller long distance trail?
I thought the Arizona trail wouldn't be as gratifying. I thought it would be less, like I thought, oh, it's only 800 miles. I can whip that out. But luckily for us, we experienced a lot of challenges with snow. So what was supposed to take us like 35, 40 days ended up taking us 50 days, which is still almost nothing. But when I think back on my memories, those 50 days felt like they lasted forever. So I think it's just realizing that every trail can be what you want it to be. And I have some amazing and fond memories of the AZT, but there is something about that 2000 plus mile trail that just really requires like the most grit and the most perseverance. And you know, 800 miles, that's a third of the AT. And, you know, back when you get to McAfee Knob, like that's where the trail would have ended. Like, I don't know if I could have, there's definitely some more gratification from doing those longer trails.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It feels like a lifetime. It feels like a novel, like chapters in a book. Yeah.
Especially when you're like 100 miles in and you're like, oh my, I have 2000 more miles. Like,
yeah.
when you only have 400 miles, you're like, heck yeah, we're almost done. But like the first half of that trail, it's like no end in sight. Don't even worry about it because it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Yep.
When did the catchphrase of "Look, Ma" catch on? I saw it a bunch of times in your videos and Instagram stories.
Well, I think it's because when I started hiking with my tramly, a lot of my height, like my friends, their parents were watching my vlogs to catch glimpses of their children. So it just became this thing where everyone's like, "Hey, Mom! Hi, Mom!" Like. And then, you know, their mom would text them, I saw you in Julia's video. Like, oh, thank you for the shout out. So it just became this thing where it's like always to give a shout out to your mom or to a loved one. And it just kind of carried on. And now I do it like in a lot of videos. So
how's your family feel about you and your through hiking career?
They are used to it by now. My mom, is every year, she's like, this is the one that's going to break her and she's not going to want to do it. Like, she's going to be normal again. And, you know, even after like through hiking, I'm like, oh, I think I'm done. You know, 3 months later, I'm like, well, there's this other trail that, you know.
Yep. So,
they accept me. They love it. I think they're very proud of me for doing it. Something that none of them want to do. So it's kind of, you know, they accept me just like I accept them and, you know.
Yeah. What were some of your favorite parts of the AZT and your least favorite parts of the AZT?
I mean, if you haven't been to the Grand Canyon, even if you have, if you haven't done rim to rim, it is absolutely stunning. We hiked down in the one day and then camped at the whatever that campground is down by the Colorado River, and then we hiked up the rim the next day. So in the morning when we were hiking up, a lot of rim to rim to rim hikers or runners were, you know, we were walking up while they were running, and I was, you know, lapping them with my pack on. They're like, what is going on? Like, this little girl with this heavy pack is flying up past us. And, you know, by then, you know, we had our trail legs. So Grand Canyon was absolutely stunning. I personally love the low desert. I love the saguaro cactuses. That whole like area from Saguaro National Park, like near Phoenix, was just so beautiful. I'm obsessed with saguaros. Like, they grow 40 feet tall and it takes like 250 years. Like, the concept of a cactus growing is just wild to me. So the low desert and definitely the Grand Canyon were my top, you know, features.
Before jumping on the AT, we went out to Phoenix and we did the Superstition Wilderness just mind-blowing. It doesn't feel like you're in the United States like at all.
And the We didn't learn about this till after we got out of the superstitions, but apparently they're like really, really haunted and spiritual. So if like, I remember at one point I had this like weird vibe where I just felt like someone was watching me. And I guess there's this folklore or this, you know, story that there's these little men, like little spiritual men that will harass you if you camp alone. And a funny story, my friend Winget and I were camping together, and then our friend Mayer he camped like 2 miles away just because he couldn't find somewhere to set up his tarp. Well, that night he said he thought we were messing with him, and there was people running around his tarp and like hitting the tarp. And I mean, there was 3 inches of snow. There was no footprints the next day.
Wow.
And, you know, me and Winget, we had no idea that that had happened. And we think it was the spirits of the superstition wilderness. So.
Nice. Wow. Nice. All we had was a really annoying chicken-esque bird chirping outside our tent at like 3 a.m.
Yeah.
it could be the spirits.
It could have been.
There it is. John Moore says, now you just gotta raft the Grand Canyon.
I would love
Have love you been that. Rafting before?
So when I came back from the CDT, I was like looking at something I could do local, and I got into whitewater rafting. I've done it 3 times now. And if I wasn't going to hike the PCT next year, I was going to be a raft guide. So yeah, now rafting is high on my radar of things that interest me, and it's so cool.
Where have you gone rafting?
So in like where my family lives in Pennsylvania, about an hour south, it's called the Ohio Pile like rafting community. So it's in Ohio Pile State Park. I'm not sure. I think, what is the name of the river? Of course, I can't remember at the moment. But I did that twice. I did like a class 4 and a class 5, which was
wow.
And then when I was in Costa Rica in November, we did class 4s in Costa Rica as well. So now I'm just like, how many times can I go? And the community is kind of like hiker trash. They're just like, they call them river rats. So it's kind of like the community that we have. It's just like river people. So it's really cool.
Good. Nice. It's called the,
it's in the chat right now.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a mouthful. So let's jump into the CDT. So you got off the AZT, what would that have been, like end of April or May?
Yeah, I got off the AZT in like the beginning of April. And then I started the CDT on July 4th. So I had a couple months off in between to just kind of hang out with my family. And then I wasn't planning on doing the CDT. I was going to go PCT SOBO. And then my friend Gail had convinced me. She's from the UK. She hiked the AT SOBO the year I went NOBO. And she kind of convinced me to go SOBO on the CDT. And, you know, a couple months later, there we were.
Wow. Nice. Mm-hmm. Was it hard to convince you, or were you just like, all right, let's do it?
I was like, cool. I didn't really want to do the PCT SOBO because I feel like that's more of a northbound trail. And the CDT, like when we were hiking, the SOBO bubble was almost bigger than the NOBO bubble, because I think most people that hike the CDT recommend to do it southbound. Mm-hmm. Because of weather. And I mean, who doesn't want to see Glacier in the summer? It was so beautiful. So it wasn't hard. She's just like, want to do the CDT? I'm like, sure. When? Let me know when you're here.
Had you ever been hiking in that area before?
I had never been to Montana. I mean, I'd driven through Montana, but I'd never done any hiking there. Glacier, it was number one on my list of national parks to see. So I got to see it in one of the coolest ways, you know, by foot through the entire national park. And if I tell anyone to do any section of the CDT, which I've only done 400 miles, like the Glacier section is just, it's so beautiful. It's like not real. It's so beautiful.
So what were those first 400 miles like? Were they fun? Were they challenging? Were they not fun?
We hit the ground running. So Glacier is a permit system. You can only hike. You have to apply for where you're going to stay each night. So in Glacier, we did like a 6-mile day, a 15-mile day, an 8-mile day, a 30-mile day. So once we left Glacier, we kind of hit the ground running. I thought, I want to get home before Christmas. Let's see how fast we can do this. So that's when we started pulling consecutive 25 to 30s, like almost every day. So I took no zeros. I took no days off the whole entire trail. I think the lowest mile day I had was probably like, you know, that 6-mile day, which was like the first day we hiked. I did 420 miles in 20 days and just cruised through it. It's much easier to do bigger miles if you just, you know, get up with the sun, which, you know, at that point, the days were, you know, from 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. and we're just cruising. And yeah, it was big miles, big challenge, but it really wasn't that demanding on my body. So it felt, it was nice. I loved the challenge and I plan on doing the PCT in a similar fashion where we just initially start going big, hopefully.
Yeah.
What was the terrain like? Did you find it easier than the AT?
Absolutely. Except for in the Bob Marshall, there was like 200 blowdowns in 10 miles. And it took all day to do like those 10 miles. And then we had to, you know, make up for lost time. But in reality, you know, even the climbs there, it might be 3,000 feet, but it's over 12 miles. I felt that it was much easier on my body. I didn't have the immense foot and knee and hip pain and back pain that I did on the AT. It's more like the AZT where it's like slow and steady and gradual. You know, you could go all day, do 28 miles and only have one 3,000 foot climb. So it was, the terrain is much easier per se, but there's also far less resources and you're in a grizzly country where you're carrying bear spray. And that was terrifying in itself. Like every day I have nightmares that a bear is going to like eat me out of my tent. And you know, it was just, yeah.
Did you see any?
We saw a couple of black bears. A lot, everyone that we hiked with had seen or had to, you know, spray a grizzly bear. So
really?
People had seen them, but it was always like, oh, right, 10 minutes after you guys left this break spot, a grizzly bear came by. So luckily I didn't see a grizzly bear, thankfully, you know, but we saw some black bears and I don't think we saw like anything else really dangerous, just a lot of marmots and a mountain goat and, you know, just some cute little furry friends.
Yeah.
What felt more remote? Did the AZT or did like Montana feel more remote?
The CDT was 100% more remote. Absolutely. You could go 150 miles without crossing a road and, you know, no, absolutely no resources out there. So very remote.
Interesting. So how long did it take to, or how long did it take to decide to then get off the CDT?
So I lost my beloved pup of 11 years on July 9th, I believe. And so that was like our 1 week. We had been on the trail for 1 week. And I thought, you know, I might as well stay out there because, you know, he's gone. He, like, I didn't have a chance to say goodbye. So I thought maybe the trail was like my therapy on the AT. So like when anything, you know, I healed more on trail than I did at home. So I thought I'll just stay out here. I'll do my healing out here. I'll cry in the beautiful nature. And, you know, after 2 weeks of that, I was still crying like 8 hours a day. And I just realized that if I need, you know, at this point, I just need to go home because I don't want to hike the CDT completely devastated. I want to hike it when I'm happy. And so I literally made the decision the next day. And then I got a ride into town the next day and went home. So I kind of hung on for 2 weeks where it's like, maybe it'll just flip and I'll start feeling better. And then at one point I was like, I miss my mom. I want to go home. I don't want to be out here because I'm not experiencing it the way I want to. So I just made the decision and I went home the next day.
Yeah. Was there any guilt surrounding getting off the trail?
You know, I thought I would feel more of a failure, but in reality, I didn't quit because it was hard. I didn't quit because I wanted to. I just quit because I knew that if I finished the trail, I would look back and think, oh, I was so sad or I was crying every day. So in reality, I'm actually thankful that I came home because it led me into a lot of other decisions that have made me really happy now. So I'm looking forward to hopefully doing the CDT again and being able to embrace it a little differently compared to like going through the mourning process of losing a pet. So no guilt, I don't think.
Nice. Yeah. Good.
No, I think it takes a lot of strength to be able to step back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I came home, I was just, I was actually thankful. Like there was nothing like, oh, and then seeing my friends posting like where, like the places we hadn't been or I hadn't been with them, there was a little bit of jealousy, but really no guilt. It was kind of like, oh, I kind of wish I was still with them, but also I was more thankful that I was home with my family.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Is it still in the cards? Like, are you still planning on eventually doing the CDT?
I think I would go northbound and I would definitely plan on doing it again. I mean, why not?
Yeah, right.
I don't have going on as far as like goals, like the PCT 100% happening. CDT, if I don't through hike it, I don't think I'll ever beat myself up over it. but it is on my radar. And if I can make it happen in the next couple of years, then absolutely.
Do you have other smaller trails on your radar over the CDT?
I definitely want to do the PCT. And then in 2023, if the CDT is not really coming to fruition, I definitely want to do a big, small year where I do the Arizona Trail again, the Colorado Trail again, maybe the Benton McKay or the Pinhoti Trail, and then also the Long Trail. So I want to do 2,000 miles of little trails.
Yeah.
So
Just get a whole, like, taste of the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And finish the JMT, which I would, you know, the John Muir Trail looks like probably the prettiest 300-mile trail ever to exist in, you know, our country. So that would be also on the list.
Yeah, cool.
So what were some of the biggest lessons you learned from your experience on the CDT, getting off the CDT and all of that?
I think a lot of it is that people are going to tell you what you should and shouldn't do, and people are going to have an opinion, especially people that don't necessarily know you, like on social media. And I think I had a very few comments of very angry people that I'm just a quitter and I was only out there for the pictures or, you know, I mean, I think I've proven now that I don't just through hike because it looks good. I think anyone could make it as many miles as we have by just sheer wanting to look good for whatever reason. I had a few angry people that were just saying, like, you're a quitter, you're a failure. And I kept thinking, well, if that's what you want to call me, like, my opinion, your opinion of me is really none of my business. So you're more than welcome to do whatever you want. And then just learning that sometimes doing what's best for you is the thing that you don't want to do. And unfortunately, like, making that decision, you know, can be devastating, but also you have to embrace that, do what's best for you and don't let anyone else tell you, especially if you know the right thing.
Yeah. Nice. We're going to get into the social media stuff, but yeah, definitely.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you want to say it?
Sure. So we are going to take a quick break to do a rapid fire through hiker question round. So we're going to put a 1 minute timer on and we're going to just ask you a bunch of questions. No explanation for your answer. Just say the first thing that comes into your mind and we'll see how many questions we can get through.
Okay, let's do it.
All right.
Ready?
Wait, let me just pull it up. Okay, here we go. Ready?
Yep. And go.
Okay. Poles or no poles?
Poles.
Hang or sleep with your food?
Sleep.
Hike. Best hiking shoe?
Ultras.
AT, PCT, or CDT?
Hopefully PCT.
Best state to hike in?
Ooh, Montana.
Favorite food to eat on trail?
Chips, Doritos, Fritos.
Smiles over miles or miles over smiles?
Oh, both. It depends.
Your longest mileage day?
30 consecutive 30s.
Shelter or tent?
Tent.
Best season to hike in?
Summer.
One luxury item that you carry in your pack?
Toenail clippers.
A tent, cowboy camp, or hammock?
Cowboy camp.
Nero or Zero?
Zero.
Nice. There we go. Wait. We bullied Quadzilla over this. You sleep with your food?
Well,
so do we.
I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. We do too.
There's times where it's unsafe. Absolutely. Like in Grizzly Country, you would never, you would die. Like a woman literally got eaten to death in Montana from sleeping with her food. So not in Grizzly Country, but you know, on the AZT, the worst you're going to get is a couple of the javelinas coming to, like, munch on your, you know, feet, but.
That's true. You get hungry, too, at 2 a.m.
Yeah, you need your snacks.
Yeah, and I like to eat breakfast in my sleeping bag, and I don't have to get out.
That's true.
How early on did you end up sleeping with your food?
I was good. I didn't sleep with my food until after Harper's Ferry.
Okay.
Yeah.
I followed the rules until I realized that some of them are pointless.
Yeah.
We were going into Damascus and we were still hanging our food in Damascus. And in the middle of the night, there was a bear that comes nudging on our tent and literally like his nose goes through like our tent.
Our fly.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, what is that? Like, and he just circles the tent for the next, I don't know, hour and a half. And that was the defining moment when we were like, nope, we're just going to sleep with our food. If the bear wants us without the food, he's going to want us with the food too.
You can throw the food out as a, like, a, here, have this, don't eat me, you know? I always
thought that's true.
A Snickers bar, you know, and then it will leave you alone.
There it is. Okay, so, oh, I'm sorry. Let's get into the social media, like the good, the bad, and the ugly. It seemed like you had a pretty big social media presence at the start of your AT through hike. And so what pressures or expectations did you have about like the content that you put out in the beginning of your hike? Or did you have any?
So it's really weird. I had just your regular amount of followers up until like January, and then the trek or Appalachian.trail had shared like my gear picture, which, you know, everyone does before their first through hike, you know, you want to look cool. And they had shared it, and I woke up overnight with like 3,500 new followers. Wow. And I'm like, what? And I didn't realize that they had shared my picture. And I'm like, what? Like, what? This is a fluke. Like, you know, I'm not, you know, what am I doing? And by the time, you know, I had started the trail, there was exponentially more people like invested in me, which was crazy. So initially, like on the AT, I tried to post a picture every single day. And there was times where I'm posting things and I'm like, why are you showing this? Like, who cares? And some of them were just like me drinking, you know, blue Gatorade outside of Bear Mountain when it was 110 degrees. And some of them were, you know, pretty landscapes. I felt the pressure that I needed to post every day to be relevant because people that maybe couldn't through hike want to know what I'm doing. And I think that kind of made me post in a way that was unhealthy. Like, well, what am I going to put on there today? Like, how are people going to see what I'm doing? And I think I took it a little too seriously. And then for my other few hikes, I think on the AZT, I posted like 9 pictures on the entire trail. So yeah, I think that it made me feel pressure to be a certain or appear a certain way because, you know, that was the first time having like exposure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you, so like, I guess maybe after that first experience, how do you try to stay true to yourself when, you know, posting on social media?
I think now I just post what I want to. If you know, I still sometimes feel that if I don't post a pretty view with me in it, it gets far less engagement. So I think like subconsciously, like my brain knows post, you know, take this image because it's probably going to be what you share. But also I like being in, I like having the memory of standing there. But now I just learned that posting every day isn't going to make people love you. It's not going to make people hate you. Most people take social media too seriously when we're posting, but as we're ingesting social media, we're just like scrolling, you know, watching TV. Yeah. Like no one's at home. Like, what is she doing? Like nobody is that, you know, invested in anyone's life that we should ever feel that our lives are not as important if we're not posting.
That's true. Yeah. That's really well said.
Yeah. You said for the longest time in one of your live streams that you were only posting like through hiking content and that was the only thing on your feed and you wanted to now just kind of include every part of your life. What was your mindset behind that?
So I think it's this toxic outdoors attitude where it's like you have to be relevant. Like everyone now is snowboarding through the winter. And if you're not snowboarding, what are you being a bum on the couch? I'm being a bum on the couch and doing yoga and I'm watching Survivor. Like that's what not that exciting. But I realized that I felt like I was posting this certain look. And if you look at my feed, I still feel like it looks that way. I haven't really been able to break out of it. But that's why I've also just kind of stopped posting. And you'll see I post more like real, like the R-E-E-L, because it's more like just funny things and like pictures. And I don't feel so like serious about those. But I definitely think that it's harder to share like who I am, like who Julia is, because people, I feel like only liked me because of who Rocket was. And so like finding that middle ground of like, I want to post a picture of nachos and like actually doing it is hard for me because I feel like my identity online is Rocket. And it's still like a struggle for me. And you know, every time, like I posted Costa Rican, like our vacation from Costa Rica, and the engagement was initially great. And then it just like tapered on YouTube. And so just like realizing that people don't really want to see like what I'm up to if I'm not hiking, but that's okay. Cause I should still do it if I want to. And that's okay.
Are you afraid of the transition like self-consciously, or is it like you're actually getting backlash from people?
No, I think it's just the concept of like, we get validation from social media. It's a horrible concept, but it's true. Especially like our age, growing up, we grew up with technology. We grew up with, we were literally the patient zero of social media. Like we're the game. And so I think we get that validation. And I actually listened to this really great podcast. It's Huberman Lab, and it's about social bonding through social media. And all this time, I think, why am I so worried about people liking what I'm sharing? And then I realized there's an actual science behind social bonding and social media. If we feel like we've created these relationships online, then we feel like that's where we're getting validation from. And like scientifically, that's why I was like, why am I getting so hurt if the things that I want to share aren't doing well? When in reality, it's just because I feel rejected from these somewhat false or social media created relationships. And just realizing that, you know, no matter what, even in middle school, if the kids didn't want to eat lunch with you, like, you're still a valid person. You still have wants and desires, and they still deserve to be met.
Interesting. Yeah. Do you feel like through hiking would have been easier before, I guess, like the late 2010s into now, just with social media blowing up now?
Yeah. Let me just tell you. So my boyfriend, who I'm hiking the PCT with, he hiked in 2012, right? Not a cool time to through hike. I mean, nobody even knew what that was. There wasn't an AT, class of AT, whatever hashtag on Instagram. They had iPods. They had flip phones. And nice. They didn't have, you know, the resources that we have to share stuff. So he's like, I only knew the people in my bubble that I personally met. I didn't know there was 100 people in front of me, 100 people behind me. I didn't know someone hiked it in 90 days. And I think it was easier to do it then and be in the moment because you weren't expected or feeling like you were expected to do anything other than just hike.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like a lot of people say I'm here, especially like big trails like the AT and the PCT, I'm out here to like find myself again. Yet I see like so many people still just like glued to their social media. And I don't really know. There's just a disconnect there in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Sometimes I wish it, like, I wonder what it would have been like to do it without it, and would it have been better?
I bet pretty cool. We'll never know. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
We'll never know.
I always wonder what life would have been like without gut hooks and just like GPS maps in general. And I'm like, oh, I would have gotten lost.
I would have been so lost.
He's like, we had to like literally think, did we go to point two? Like, where's the water? Like, they didn't have, like, Gaia even, I don't think, was mainstream. It was like download maps or the AWOL guide. Like, literally has, like, circles in his AWOL guide of, like, where he stayed and what rivers where and, like, where his friends were, like, on what date. It's crazy.
What do you wish that your average follower knew or understood, like, about Julia, about you?
That I am sensitive, but also... I take no shit, but I also get my feelings hurt, okay? So, like, I might be, like, you know, if you're mean to somebody or you're mean to me, like, I'm gonna respond because I want people to be held accountable for what they do. But also, like, everything you say, everything you message me, everything that you send to me, like, as a person, like, if someone at Walmart was like, you're ugly, I'm gonna run you over with my cart, like, that would affect me. Just like everything we say online affects every person that reads that comment. Even you reading a comment on my post of hate or something mean can affect you. So just, I think social media is just, it can be in a wonderful place, but it can also be extremely targeted, like toxic. And just remember that everybody has feelings, like everybody, even sociopaths can fake them. That just, you know, everyone has feelings and I'm sensitive.
Yeah, fair.
what has been your strategy with dealing with the hate or combating people who come at you?
Some days I just block and move on because it, depending on what they say, like sometimes I feel like maybe there's a conversation where we can both grow. Like if someone says, I don't like you, I'm unfollowing. Okay, thank you. But if someone says, I don't like that you did this and here's why and I'm unfollowing, then that gives me a chance to say, okay, how can I grow? How can you grow? How can we, like, how can I grow and change? Like, I post things that could be insensitive or they can be targeting or they can be triggering. And I want to know. And I've had people message me and we've developed a friendship because of that. So, you know, a lot of times I block. Sometimes I fight back. Sometimes, you know, you just have to like realize that when somebody's mean, especially online, it usually has to do with something going on in their life, not you. You're just the target when in reality, you know, they're experiencing some type of pain that makes them want to act out.
Yeah. That's very true. I'm like going back to this, but what are the pros and cons about the thru hiking community, not only having a home on the trail, but now online?
Pros are you can find people to hike with. I hiked half of the people that I hiked with this year, I met through social media and we linked up to hike on trail together. It's a wonderful resource if you feel like you want to get into hiking, but you don't know where to go. There's a Hiking Women of North Carolina group that I'm in. And now any chance I want, I can go hike with them. Mm-hmm. It's a great place to feel support too. Like, hey guys, look at my new pack. And everyone can say it's beautiful or I would use something else. Cons are everyone has an opinion. And some people feel that theirs is gospel or fact, or it's more important than your feelings. And I think that's kind of where we fall in line with. There's certain people that have experience and they want you to know that you're wrong. When in reality, like we all learned when we were wrong, you know, by our trial and error. And I think that's important, is to like let people make their mistakes as long as it's not unsafe.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been tough. I think the toughest part about the hiking community on social media has been the Facebook groups of the different classes. I remember, especially when 2020 happened, that turned toxic really, really fast. And it got deleted. It was hard to watch a community that like was quote unquote so welcoming to be such a hateful bunch of like divided people.
Yeah. And that's the weird thing, is you have half the people that are out there to just frolic in the forest. Half the people are out there to like FKT. Then you have some people who have a lot of experience, some people that have none. You have ultralighter, you have regular, you know, pack people. And it's just a mixture. Like, that's what makes us great, is like you can hike with somebody that's 70 years old or 15. Like, when would I ever have that option? But also divisive. And I think that like right now we're seeing more of that than ever, like in the world and also in the hiking community. So
yeah. So how can outdoor and hiking influencers create a better overall online outdoor community?
I think transparency is key. Like anything I've ever gotten for free, I'm like, this was free. Like, here's a resource if you're interested. I've also personally stopped taking a lot of like endorsements or free things just to share. And I'll tell people, this was free and they asked me to look at it. Here, I'm looking at it. It's pretty cool. But also transparency, and then just trying to like foster kindness. So especially when there's like a heated argument going on in the comment section of someone's post, a lot of times I'll come in here and say, hey guys, or hey folks, or hey whomever, like let's keep it respectful. Instead of just like deleting it and letting them both be angry or upset, like go in and say, hey guys, like let's talk about this, or what's going on, or just trying to like referee, because when you post something, ultimately you're responsible for the way that it's received and the way that it's, you know, talked about. And if, you know, it needs addressed, then, you know, I think just fostering that like equality and like openness and responsiveness. And it's, social media isn't a business. Like no one is making, I'm not making money off Instagram. I don't know anyone that's making cash off Instagram. So like, let's just not take it so seriously.
But do you feel like it's your responsibility as an influencer to really have to, what am I trying to say? Like not referee, but really create that? Is that really your responsibility to facilitate that?
I don't think that it's anyone's responsibility, because everyone just is converging on certain topics with their own life experiences and their own opinions. And right. A lot of times they just clash in, and nobody should have to referee anything on social media or online, but we live in the world where people will literally look on your page, take a picture and like create a horrible meme about it, or mm-hmm. or you know, do something just to, you know, very petty things. And I think that although it's not my responsibility, I want to be part of the solution and not part of the problem.
Mm. Yeah. Well said. Well said. So you went and did the Art Lobe Trail after the CDT, after getting off the CDT. Mm-hmm. What made you pick the Art Lobe?
Well, it's only like 3 hours away from here and it's only 30 miles. So we did it in like 48 hours, and honestly, it was very difficult. It was there with the AT, if not like a hair tougher than some of the AT.
Yeah, I've heard that it's some of the toughest 30 miles, and you're just like dying after.
I think the first day we did six, we were gonna do like a 20, and we did 16, and I'm like, I literally can't walk like any further. So.
Is it just because it's like PUDs, like up and down, up and down?
Yeah, I think like the terrain is like kind of rocky and rooty, like if you know, like the North Carolina on the AT, but it's just like a little up, a little 500 up, 500 down, 500 up, 500 down, and like it's just enough to drive you crazy. Like I don't think there's one flat section on the entire trail at all. Like there's not one 10 foot section that's flat.
Good, good. Did you enjoy it?
It was beautiful. So the second half, well, there's like a 4 mile stretch of like the really beautiful section. And I would recommend if you want to go check it out, you can park, hike up like 2 miles, camp there, and hike back to your car if you know that's what you're into. I would recommend the trail because it was hard and it's a small trail you can do in a very short amount of time. I enjoyed it. Probably wouldn't do it again though.
Good.
Did you know about it? Like how early on did you hear about the Artlope Trail?
So a friend of mine, Adventure Like a Girl, she is this amazing like hiker who attempted a few hike of the AT. She was posting about how she'd want to do it. And I thought, well, I have a couple days coming up. And I'm like, I don't know anything about it. I just like Googled Artlope Trail and just the beautiful pictures popped up. And I'm like, well, I'm off like in 2 days. Like, let's do it. Mm-hmm. So I learned about it like not even 3 days before we started.
Nice.
Did you have good weather during it?
Yeah, it was chilly at night, but beautiful. Perfect.
Do you feel like it would have been really tough in bad weather, in the rain?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It would be absolutely miserable. And you're not going to get the views that, you know, you would get otherwise. So there's no reward.
Good. Good. Was there many other people hiking it when you were on trail?
I think we saw no other hikers except like the section that has the pretty views. We saw like 4 people camping there that had like parked their car below the summit. But we saw no other hikers. It was just my boyfriend and I. Mm.
You said that you like you could recommend doing the 2 miles in, 2 miles out. But someone that wants to do the entire 30 miles, would you recommend that for like a first-time backpacker, an intermediate?
I think a first-time backpacker could do it in 3 days. Like I think, or 3 or 4 days. It's definitely attainable. We did it very quickly and I mean, we had no trail legs. We were coming straight off like a beach vacation. So, you know, it was a little more challenging, but absolutely anyone can do it. I think just you take your time.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess in order of all the trails you've done so far, rank them from like your favorite to least favorite.
Okay. So I'll also count the OCT, even though we did a very small section of the Oregon Coast Trail, because that was stunning. It's kind of hard to do. Like, the CDT was beautiful, but I didn't do the whole trail. I was kind of sad. But the views were absolutely stunning. But the AT will always have my heart. It will always be, like, my little baby. And then the AZT, you know, was, like, just a fun experience all around. So if I had to rate them, we'll go AT, CDT, tied with AZT, we'll tie them, and then we'll throw like the Oregon Coast Trail because it was raining like every day, and then we'll throw the Artlope Trail at the end.
Okay, nice, nice. You said after you did a live stream after the CDT, getting off it, and you said you wanted to like reshape the way you looked at thru hiking.
Yeah.
Did the Artlope Trail allow you to do that in any way?
Yeah, so I think when I got off the CDT, I was so disconnected from everything because I was just so distraught. And I thought, like, maybe thru hiking isn't the answer for me. So I just thought, I thought maybe I was done thru hiking. In reality, I thought, I'm just broken. I just don't think this is for me. I don't think I'm ever going to want to thru hike. Like, doing 400 miles with the CDT, I thought, why don't I just do that? Like, why don't I just section hike everything? And then, of course, a few months later with, you know, time passing, it's of course I want to do the full trail of the next thing that I do. But I also think that looking at it is, don't take it so seriously. Nobody's getting murdered if I don't complete it. I'm not like losing a job or career opportunity. I'm not getting flunked out of college. Like, it's hiking is an amazing achievement. It is very challenging, but it's also something we are very privileged and lucky enough to get to do. So instead of feeling like it's this thing that I must do, like it's something I get to do. So if I don't complete a trail, I'm lucky enough to have the miles that I do, and just not taking it for granted and also realizing how lucky and privileged a lot of us are to get to do it.
Yeah.
Well said.
Cool. Yeah. So you've already said you're going to do the PCT. What is your plan? Are you doing Sobo? Are you going Nobo?
We are going to go northbound. We're going to start. We got permits very luckily. Which, oh my gosh, that permit system this year was the most stress I've experienced in a very long time. We were so lucky. And to those that didn't get permits yet, like January's coming up, January 11th, put it on your calendar. Like, I hope the PCTA releases more permits than they need to release more permits this permit time too, because there was like hundreds of people that messaged me saying, I didn't get a permit. Like, what do I do? Like, that's normal. I've never heard of anyone not getting a permit. Usually it's like, I didn't get the one I wanted, but I've never heard of anyone just not getting any permit whatsoever. Two of the people in my tramly, like, they didn't get permits yet. So just it's crazy.
Yeah. We got very different days. And so we're hoping January 11th, we can switch our days, but.
Yeah. Are you question too? I guess people ask me questions and I don't know, cause I've never like, I've literally gotten three PCT permits and I've had to like, one got revoked, one I gave back because of 2020. And then last year or this year, I had a southbound date, but I ended up not using it because I hiked. I don't know if, like, I didn't know in January if people got the wrong dates. Can they, like,
I'm pretty sure
switch the date?
Yeah, because in the portal it says like new permit or existing permit, and I think when the portal opens for people that already have permits, I think you can switch your dates around, which is also going to be a mess for people that still don't have it that want to get it, and the people that are it's just a big bloodbath of
it really is.
In 2020 I had some issues with my permit date, and if you call the PCTA, like, there's a number, and leave a message, a lot of times they're really willing to work with you. Sometimes they'll say, like, you can only have that permit, like, you know, but they try to help you, or they'll try to let you know if, like, the day you need opens up. Because I was trying to change my permit day in 2020 because I got like a May 28th start date. It was super late, and, you know, I ended up getting to move it up to like May 15th because they had like called me and said, there's a permit open like earlier on, like go and snag it. So
The thing is, I know right now, like, the permits that have been released, they're gone within seconds.
Yeah.
Like, the people are crazy right now trying to get them.
And that just like brings up a whole other issue of like, I know it's not gatekeeping, but also like everyone that wants to should, and it's, but then you also have the leave no trace, and we want people to respect the system, and it just is a very, you know, crappy situation where we don't, you know, people, I want everyone to hike the PCT. I think everyone should get to, but also I understand the permit. So it just sucks.
I think, though, my opinion is, if you really do want to hike it, there's still local permits that you can get. Like, if you're really set on doing it, you can do it. You just have to put the extra time in.
And I've also shared, so, like, right after that permit day, I also shared the resource that the Trek has a post where it's, like, every permit that you need and how to get it. And some of them are, like, walk-up. Some of them are, like, the day before. But I think that most of those should be attainable if, you know, you can't get a permit in January.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you happy with your start date? Like, are you happy starting on March?
It's 2 days after when we actually wanted to start, because my boyfriend, he works in the fall. So he has to be back for work. And so we're doing our best. We want to try to get done as soon as possible, but we don't want to start too early. So the permit we got is perfect.
Nice. Is it weird having a deadline? Is this your first time that you've had like a deadline on a trail?
Yeah, it's not, we could come back and then finish the trail after, like, in the fall, which would be okay, but it is weird, like, knowing we have a deadline, but also we kind of wanted to do it fast anyway, so we'll see how it goes. I mean, we'll see.
Yeah.
What is your plan, like, with your boyfriend? Are you guys sharing a tent? Are you guys going to be together the whole time? Like, what's your...
This is my first time ever hiking with a hiking partner that, like, I didn't meet, like, on trail or, like, someone I'm actually going to hike with. So we're, like, trying to figure out which tent will fit us best and, like, who's going to carry the pot and who's going to carry this. And it's actually nice because, like, I don't have to carry everything. And but we're just trying to figure out the best tent. We have it narrowed down to, like, the Big Agnes. What is it? The Tiger Wall? The yellow one? So I was like, okay, that's probably what we're going to use. Since he already has one. And then I have a Hyperlite Mountain Gear Dura Go 2, which I use on the CDT. I don't think we could fit in that one, but, we were thinking of maybe the Gossamer Gear, the 2 as well. But we want the DCF one, but they've been out of stock for like a year. So it's just trying to, I think other than that, we kind of have it all locked in.
Nice. They need to really start labeling the 3-person tents as like 2-person adult tent. It's hard to try to find a tent that's both lightweight but also like roomy enough for two people to share.
Yeah, I just can't imagine us like sleeping in separate tents, like, okay, good night. I just think that would be
it's weird.
But I mean, people do it and they seem to, so I don't know.
I guess it's like their only time to have their like alone time.
But, yeah.
Or they don't like being stinky with their partner.
That's true.
Yeah, we'll see, because I mean, if he gets too stinky, he's going to, but I think we'll be cowboy camping for most of the trail. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think we'll be okay. Mm-hmm. I think we'll waft his stench away. Just sleep upwind, right?
Yeah.
Always. Have you done any parts of the PCT?
I have not. I've never been on the PCT. So I'm so excited.
Yeah, all first experiences. Have you seen like the snow report and everything that's going on right now?
It's not looking great.
Yeah.
The way I look at it is, with the fire closures, it's going to happen. We know, like from last year, we're not going to be able to do a connected footpath anyway. So we're also not like, we're not super concerned about connecting every single footprint. So if we have to skip some sections because of snow and come back another year, we're not like, you know, we're not going to cry if people tell us we didn't actually through hike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get it. How is this hike going to be different than the others, like gear and mentality wise?
Gear wise, it's almost the exact same gear as I had on the AZT, just because I think I finally found like exactly what works for me. And it's really not much different than what worked on the AT. Like, I think I was very lucky. I had a lot of perfect gear. And then I think just we're going to try to do big miles, but have fun. And I think now that we both through hiked, it's going to be like, you know what to expect. Like, you know, the absolute worst and best that can happen. So I think we're just going to be able to hopefully just kind of kick butt.
Nice.
Here's a question. This is going back to social media. Are you nervous? Not nervous, but like, have you thought about being like recognized on a bigger trail like this, just since you were on smaller trails before?
I mean, I was recognized on the AT, like on the first day, which I thought was like, who, what? Like, that was completely like, it felt like I was in the Twilight Zone. I was recognized on the Art Loeb Trail by a day hiker. I was recognized on the Arizona Trail. I mean, which is just, I think because I had post YouTube videos, any person that's like Arizona Trail, like any person that, you know, who does, I mean, I've been watching PCT vlogs of people from this year. So, you know, I think it's easy to find, you know, somebody that you can recognize. But I'm not too concerned. Generally, most people are very nice and very kind and welcoming. There's a few who like think they know you and they might be a little bit hesitant, but I haven't had any person other than on the AT people trying to like wait at road crossings to see me. And that was like the only time that I ever felt kind of uneasy, but great.
I just remember watching, Darwin's PCT videos. And, I was also listening to his Outdoor Evolution podcast, and he was talking about how there was a shift in his vlogs by the end of the PCT because people really just started like recognizing him every, you know, 10, 20 miles. And he really felt like they were in it for the experience of meeting like a trail celebrity. And those interactions, I guess, didn't feel as genuine. And I was just curious to know, like, yeah, that opinion.
Mm-hmm. I met Darwin on the CDT, actually. I didn't really ever say anything to anyone. And even in my vlogs, when he was nearby, I never said his name just because maintain his privacy. We were sitting like on the trail scooping out of this tiny little puddle for lunch, and he walked up and I was like, oh hey man, like I'm Rocket, like what's your trail name? And he looked at me like, you know who I am. I was like, oh, like, you know, just trying to pretend like, oh, like I didn't know him. And like, he's actually a very nice guy, and I can see how hard it would be because, you know, he just wants to go out there and experience the trail. And I think the CDT class this year was like very no muss, no fuss. Everyone had, most people were triple crowning or they were on their second or third trail. So it wasn't like, oh, you're Darwin. Everyone was like, hey, Darwin, like we're going to go to dinner and want to come. It wasn't like anyone glorified him. And I think I hope he enjoyed his CDT hike because I think it was probably a little bit different.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Interesting.
Nice.
So is there anything else about the PCT?
No, I don't think so.
So I guess like starting to wrap this up, what do you hope your audience or your followers can take away from the way that you quote unquote influence them?
Well, I hope that I don't influence anybody because I mean, I'm not trying to push anything or influence anyone or do anything that's going to make anyone make a decision. But if you want to take something away from anything that I share, it's just that you can find great connections if you're vulnerable, if you're real, if you just are open, and if you don't take social media too seriously, because it does not matter. Like, it doesn't matter. And I know every time you don't have Discord or something on social media, you think about it for days, and just remembering that, you know, we have this wonderful community, and although sometimes it can be problematic, we all really just want one thing, and that's to go out, be in nature, be dirty, and eat snacks. Like, so, you know, at the end of the day, like, we all really want the same thing. And even if we don't see eye to eye, we still want the same things, and we still have something in common.
Love that. Yeah.
What advice do you have for future thru hikers?
Quit your job, sell your house, and do it.
There it is.
Just go. You won't regret it.
Yeah.
Mm. What advice do you have for Rocket, who's still on trail or who's going to be on trail? Just general advice for her or stuff to not take for granted.
Like, stop and take in the views. And focus on the people and foster the friendships and eat an extra slice of pizza every time you go into town.
Love it. Well, yeah, what's your town food?
Oof, salads, like fresh veggies and pizza. Like, just that's all I ever want in town is just like carbs, cheese, and just like Caesar salads on the AT. I was obsessed. I ate one in every town, Caesar salad. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Is there anything else that you want to let the thru hiking world know, or how people can keep up to date with your adventures?
You can find me here on the IG at Julia Sheehan, and then on YouTube, which is also just search Julia Sheehan.
Sweet. Awesome. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for coming on the pod or on live. Thanks
for having me. I finally feel like I'm back in the community a little bit after being, you know, kind of away for most of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck on the PCT next year.
Maybe we'll see you out there.
Yeah.
Heck yeah. I mean, just like I said, permits are not the end of the world, so you'll get.
Sweet.
Yeah.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Guys, thank you so much.
Did y'all enjoy the conversation with Julia? If you want to know more about her, head over to her Instagram and YouTube, which is at Julia Sheehan. If you want to join in on future live chats, you can head over to our Instagram, which is at Let's Trek Together. We go live once a week, usually on Wednesdays at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you want to get in contact with us, feel free to DM us on Instagram or send an email to letstrektogether@gmail.com. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, we would love if you guys gave us a rating on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you consume this episode. Until next time, guys,
let's trek together.